Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News for Saturday and Sunday, April 25th and 26th. It's the weekend edition. We'll start on the front page, go through and see what else is going on locally. We'll check in with if there is any relevant state and international and national news that may be of interest to us. We'll take a peek at what's going on in our editorials, wrap things up with our sports center, and spend a few minutes in the middle of our time together looking at obituaries that were received by Friday at 5. So with that, let's take a look at our front page and what is included. Danville celebrates Arbor Day. Many things in our lives are taken for granted. Trees are vital for all forms of life on our planet. It's with that thought in mind that the City of Danville partnered with Trees for Danville to get a $1 million grant from the Inflation Reduction Act and the USDA Foreign Service Urban and Community Forestry Program. Beyond the role trees play in the survival of humans, animals, and other living things, trees also provide incredible spiritual and aesthetic enrichment. Trees exist in complex networks, and their interaction with each other and with other living members of their ecosystems can remind us of our connection to one another and how to live generously. On Friday at Liberty Park in Danville, Dr. Tom Halligren and Patrick Halligren from Trees for Danville, along with Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. and several aldermen and alderwomen, celebrated Arbor Day by planting trees and giving away trees. Patrick Halligren pointed out that Trees for Danville has already planted more than 2,000 trees in the city, and they plan to do 1,000 per year for the next 3 years. "We hope these trees are here 70, 75, 100 years from now," he said. The types of trees they had on Friday included bald cypress, river birch, sycamores, and willows. In more front page news, improvements coming for county buildings. This comes to us from Commercial News reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. Millions in improvements are coming to Vermilion County government buildings. The Vermilion County Animal Shelter will be getting $2.5 million in improvements with a donation from the Julius Hegler II Foundation. The Vermilion County Board accepted the gift during its meeting on Tuesday evening. County Board member Steve Miller said the money will be used for needed improvements. "A lot of changes have occurred out of the Animal Control Department, and a lot of those play a good role in gaining confidence in the foundation of our situation," Miller said. Board member Jerry Hawker spoke about the changes the shelter has gone through. "About 1984, we had our first addition built out where the shelter is, and in the early 2000s, we had the second addition," Hawker said. "And it's time for another, but I cannot say how proud I am of the staff, the animal regulation, how much improvement in the last 18 months that have happened there." The board also approved a transfer of a 2017 Ford Transit van to the county animal shelter in exchange for $4,500 in services. The van will be used to provide extra transportation for the shelter. The George G. Cannon Building and Rita B. Garman Vermilion County Courthouse will be receiving a little over $3 million in upgrades. Board member Mark Steinbaugh spoke about the projects that needed to be completed with the Rita B. Garman Vermilion County Courthouse and Joseph G. Cannon Building, stating the replacement of the cooling tower in the building is necessary, calling the current one almost inoperable. The cooling tower will be replaced with new roofing as well as upgrades to modernize the elevator. The cooling tower is 40 years old, and county officials were told it must be replaced or there will not be any air conditioning. Kyle Richards, the maintenance supervisor, said the inside of the cooling tower has busted following a real hard winter. "The cold days we had shouldn't have done it, but it did," Richards said. "And then the inside liner, all the material from the inside of that has fallen out and getting into the system now, so it's creating havoc on all the new stuff that we've already put in the building." The cooling tower replacement will be completed by Allied Mechanical Services, Inc., approved by the county board at a cost of $219,000. The facility improvements to the Rita B. Garman Vermilion County Courthouse and Joseph G. Cannon Building were approved at a cost of $2.975 million. The other project is within this building, Cannon, and we've talked about it for quite some time. It's with the elevator, the building, but the cabin will be... Now the elevator cannot be replaced. We're grandfathered in because of the building. But the cabin will be remodeled inside and outside. New electronics, hydraulics... I would say the elevator project will not be completed until 2027. For more on the front page from Christy Jankowski, headline is County Community Members Concerned About DAC. Community members filled the room during Thursday's Danville Area Community College Board meeting. Prior to the meeting, DAC President Dr. Randy Fletcher sent out a media release stating the college is cooperating with the state on an investigation into the possible misappropriation of funds and more. The former college president, Stephen Nako, calls the allegations a farce. Nako was the college president during the years under investigation. The state is investigating whether there was misappropriation of adult education funds, false test scores, and grant performance reports for incidents alleged to have occurred between 2022 and 2025. Nako said Dr. Carl Bridges, Dean Terry Goodwin, and Deonata Brooks all resigned under duress with the threat of being fired. And he said Adult Education Director Chantel Savage Bryant, as well as DAC's barbershop instructor Terry Gord, resigned in protest of charges brought against his supervisor, Savage Bryant, according to Nako. Fletcher's running DAC into the ground by blowing up the budget, jacking up tuition and fees with the biggest increase since 2017, and trying to destroy the reputations of anyone who refuses to bend knee to him, Nako said. Tuition increased by $10 per credit hour, or about $360 to $480 per semester for a full-time student, he says. Nako sent a copy of an email from Fletcher, which states that Dr. Carl Bridges was redirected to a new role at DAC on January 28th, which was to be held until May 31st of 2027. College officials released a statement regarding an investigation on Monday, which you can read in full in Tuesday's edition of the Commercial News. After the information was released, the Commercial News sent a Freedom of Information Act request to college administrators for more information on the investigation and the educators in question. The school's response was, "It's an ongoing investigation, and Dr. Fletcher will send a media announcement when or if there's anything to report." Furthermore, the college said it will not release any information out of respect for all parties involved. During the board meeting on Thursday, several people spoke out during the public comment section. Jeff Nardoni, a member of the community, spoke out during the meeting and to the Commercial News following the meeting. Nardoni said, in part directed toward Fletcher, "Since you arrived, this institution has lost experienced leaders, long-serving employees who have been pushed out. Three department heads have been suspended, and the provost who kept this place running and was a representative of the faculty and students of this institution has been removed and relocated to Chicago." Nardoni said the policy requiring trustees to notify the president before speaking to employees is not standard. Longtime contributor to the community, Sybil Mervis, has a letter to the editor that can be found on page 4 of today's Commercial News. The Illinois Community College Board was contacted, and Chief of Staff Matt Berry released the following. "The Illinois Community College Board has received information from DAC of possible grant funding irregularities and is in a period of formal review to determine whether DAC is carrying out activities in alignment with their approved scope of work, meeting performance expectations, and using public funding in a manner that is aligned with the approved grant." I'm sure there's more to come on this story in future days. In more local news, Hill named Ambuck's 93rd First Citizen. This is a staff report. The Danville chapter of Ambuck's announced earlier this week that Tanya Hill is the 2026 recipient of annual First Citizen Award. Hill currently serves as the executive director of the Danville Area Community College Foundation, where she leads fundraising, grant development, and community engagement efforts to support educational opportunities. Through her visionary leadership, she has made enormous strides in providing low or no-cost educational opportunities to thousands of students seeking a higher education. According to a release from Ambuck's, not only does Hill excel in her professional capacity, but also tirelessly serves our community as a dedicated volunteer. She's the former board president of the Danville Library Foundation, the Boys and Girls Club of Danville, and the Danville Rotary Club, as well as the former treasurer of Vermilion Advantage. She is currently the president of the board at Workforce Enterprises, a member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals, as well as an advocate for the Do Something Initiative, advancing Pay It Forward efforts in Vermilion County. Additionally, the release states that while Tanya's accolade list is long, it is her generosity, candor, and optimism that have truly defined the spirit of her service within our community. Danville is lucky to have a bridge builder, a tireless advocate, and an indefatigable warrior represent our community in such a noble and honorable way. The Danville chapter of Ambuck's is incredibly proud to recognize this amazing woman as this year's First Citizen. A dinner to honor Hill will be held at 6 p.m. on Saturday, May 30th at the Turtle Run Banquet Center. Tickets are $35, and anyone wishing to attend should RSVP to Committee Chair Patrick Halloran by emailing at pjhalloran@gmail.com, or you can reach out by phone at 217-260-3932. Congratulations, Tanya. As always, there's much going on around our community. Let's take a look at some of the local briefs of events that are coming up this week. Dinner Benefits Learning Center. The Children's Dyslexia Center of Central Illinois is hosting a chicken and noodles dinner from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, April 27th at the Masonic Center located at 109 West North Street in Danville. The menu includes chicken and noodles, mashed potatoes, vegetable, bread, dessert, and drink, dine-in only. The cost is $12 for adults, $6 for kids between the ages of 2 and 6. There'll also be a 50-50 drawing at 6:45 p.m. Tickets are available at the Masonic Center, the Dyslexic Center, or out the door. Carryouts are available and delivery of 5 or more meals available with an advance order. If you have any questions or want to learn more, contact Sean McBride by email at smcbride1982.sm@gmail.com or by phone at 217-474-8689 for delivery options. The Food Meal Mobile is coming to Vermilion County. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank announces the Food Mobile will be distributing food to local families facing food insecurity in Vermilion County this month. On Tuesday, the 28th, the Food Mobile will make stops in Rossville and Ridge Farm. The distribution is part of the Food Bank's Food Mobile program, a system of mobile food pantries designed to help bring nutritious foods to rural or underserved areas. The first stop on April 28th will be at Chrisman Park in Rossville from 9:30 to 10:30. Followed by a stop in Ward Park in Farm Ridge from 11:30 to 1:30. For a full schedule and more about the Food Mobile, visit www.eifoodbank.org. On Wednesday, April 29th, there's a luncheon set for Christian women. The Danville Christian Women's Connection luncheon will be at noon on Wednesday, the 29th, at the Danville Second Church of Christ located at 3350 East Voorhees Street in Danville. B. Clements of Ohio will be speaking on Can You Really Do It Yourself? With music provided by Becky Woodrum. Cost for the meal and programs $20. Doors open at 11. You can RSVP to Kathy Kumler at 217-474-9996. Well, mark your calendar for those of you that are alumni of Georgetown Ridge Farm. The Georgetown Ridge Farm Alumni Association in the class of 1976 would like to invite you to attend the alumni banquet set for Saturday, May 23rd. The banquet will be held at the Beef House Banquet Center in Covington. Social hour starts at 5 p.m. Central with dinner at 6 p.m. in the program to follow. We're honoring the class of 1976 who are also hosting the event, the graduating class of 2026, and the class of 2001. Tickets are $35 for general admission, $40 at the door. Classes of 1976 and 2026 ticket prices $15 in advance or $20 at the door and can be purchased from Lori Sterwalt, the alumni chairman, and picked up at will call the day of the banquet. Call 217-799-6279. You can Venmo at Lori-Starwalk-1 or send a check to 406 East West Street in Georgetown. Please make out the check to the GRHS Alumni Association. That was a lot of information. This is for Georgetown Ridge Farm alumni. Class of 1976 will be your host. The graduating class of 2026 will be honored along with the class of 2001. And if you want to go, gosh, please reach out to Lori Sterwalt. You can email her also at lls48radtech@gmail.com. Also, next Saturday on May 2nd, the Fountain County in Indiana is celebrating its 200th anniversary at the 4-H Fairgrounds, located at 136 US 136 west of Vetersburg. The festivities will run from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. Eastern with all-day entertainment, old-time demonstrations, township history displays, and old-time children's activities and games. Much going on as we enter into this week in our area. In local police news, Danville woman found guilty of aggravated battery and mob action. This is a staff report. LaChaka Davis, 49 of Danville, was found guilty on Thursday of three felonies by a Vermilion County jury after a three-day trial. According to a release from the state's attorney's office, Davis was found guilty on two counts of aggravated battery, both Class 3 felonies, and of mob action, a Class 4 felony. In the trial, the people presented evidence that on March 30th, around 1 a.m., this was March 30th of 2024, Danville police were dispatched to a bar in the area of East South Street in reference to a fight. Upon speaking with witnesses, officers found that Davis unexpectedly attacked one victim. Subsequently, both victims were kicked and struck multiple times by Davis and her co-defendants. Upon further investigation, it was determined that Davis instigated the attack. One victim suffered from severe injuries and required facial reconstruction surgery. All co-defendants of this case have been charged and those cases have been resolved. I would like to thank the victims for their cooperation with the Danville Police Department and with my office throughout the court process. I hope the victims continue to heal both physically and mentally, said State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey. I would also like to extend my appreciation to the others cooperating witnesses who came forward. It's important to the safety of our community that witnesses come forward and speak up when a crime occurs. State Attorney Lacey would also like to thank the Danville Police Department for their work in this case and the jurors for their dedicated service during this trial. The case was prosecuted by Assistant State's Attorneys Lane Roberts and Jake Klein. The jury trial was presided over by Judge Mark Goodwin. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for June 18th. In more local news, Awareness Walk connects parents of autistic children. This comes to us from Christy Jankowski. Dateline Danville. April is Autism Awareness Month, and one mom group is holding a walk to bring parents of autistic children together in Vermilion County. Jobrea Mason, founder of MomFident, said the awareness walk will take place at 11 a.m. Saturday at Lincoln Park in Danville. MomFident is a newly formed nonprofit focusing on supporting millennial and Gen Z mothers. There were refreshments, resources, and an uplifting message during the event, and Mason said the organization was founded in September of 2025. I mostly want to accomplish making more parents in our community aware of each other, Mason said. You have students in classes together, but most parents don't know each other and may feel like they're alone. And she's no stranger to the process of your child being diagnosed. I know for a while going through the process of getting my son diagnosed, it felt very lonely, Mason said, about her experience with her son being diagnosed with autism. Mason adds that while things have changed over the years as far as public education, more needs to be done to connect families. While awareness of autism has grown, there is still a strong need for deeper understanding, support, and advocacy, said Mason. This event is about creating a space where families feel seen, supported, and connected, and where the broader community can learn what true inclusion looks like. Mason said the organization hosts events every other month, with this month focusing on autism family struggles and hopes. As a mother of a child on the autism spectrum, I understand both the beauty and the challenges of this journey, Mason added. From different therapies to EIP meetings and the emotional demands, it can be overwhelming, but no family should feel like they're navigating it alone. While the walk was held over the weekend prior to the reading of this, please know that Ms. Mason continues to ask if you have any questions, or you can contact her by emailing momfident.nfp@gmail.com. She also said to please check their website for resource links and other information. I want to be able to bring parents together to realize you're not alone, Mason said. I want to build community. So for those of you with children or grandchildren on the autism spectrum, know that Jabrea Mason, founder of MomFident, may be a great resource for you. In state news, that millionaire tax amendment fails to gain enough support. This comes to us from Ben Zielinski from Capital News, Illinois. Dateline Springfield, a millionaire tax proposal floated in the Illinois House failed to gain enough traction in Springfield this week, making it increasingly unlikely that voters will be asked to approve the measure in November. House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, a Democrat from Hillside, confirmed to reporters on Wednesday night that the constitutional amendment proposed by Representative LaShawn Ford, Democrat Chicago, is not going to be called for a vote this week. The House is not scheduled to be in after Thursday before the May 3rd deadline to put constitutional amendments on the November ballot. There were a lot of questions that people had, and they deserve to have those answers to those questions, Welch said. Increasing taxes on millionaires was a priority for Welch and many progressives in Springfield, but the speaker said it didn't have the votes to pass the House. Constitutional amendments require a 71-vote supermajority in the chamber, and the proposal was deeply unpopular with Republicans, meaning at least 71 of the House's 78 Democrats would need to push it out to the Senate. "We were very close," Welch said. "But close is not enough, and we're committed to getting it right. We're going to continue to work towards it." Well, I read right past that midpoint that I promised you I was going to take a break at. So let's take a break now and take a look at our death notices that were received by 5 o'clock on Friday. There was only one. Richard Salarin. Richard Salarin was from Oakwood. His funeral will be at 10 a.m. on Monday, April 27th at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Pastor Kent Tibben will officiate. Burial will be in the Lutheran Cemetery. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. on Monday at the funeral home. And that's unfortunately all the information I have about Mr. Salarin. But again, his funeral will probably have been completed by the time you hear this. So you may, if you know Mr. Salarin and wished you could have attended, please reach out to his family and offer your condolences. Let's take a break from the news and see what's going on in some of our columns in the editorial section. Looks like this week they're primarily focused on food and eating, which is something we all do. So let's take a look at what they have to say. Our first article today comes from Dr. Richard Elghammer, Dr. E. And Dr. E's headline is "Out with the Western Diet, In with the Traditional Diet." Let's see what we have to say. "Welcome to the Knowledge Buffet. Please take a seat in the comfortable booth over there and relax your mind. Your waitress will be with you shortly. For your dinner today, allow me to offer you a hot, spicy appetizer, a tasty food for thought. What would you do if science had proven that the diet most Americans are eating, the so-called Western diet, was directly linked to the following five disease states: obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes type 2, heart disease, and colon cancer? Once you've digested this question, the chef will serve you an incredibly delicious main course. New knowledge about a healthier diet called the traditional diet, which is now being used for disease prevention. But wait, you still have room for dessert. Yes, try this small but potent mental morsel. You will learn that by taking total responsibility for your health, you can open the door to the creation of a healthier you in mind and body. Helping the chef today are two great published books, Food Rules and Eater's Manual by Michael Pollan, and Understanding Your Health, the 10th edition by Wayne Payne, Bon Appetit. The food we eat in America is called the Western diet and is defined by Pollan as a diet consisting of lots of processed foods and meats and lots of refined grains, lots of everything except vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. Pollan does not consider processed foods to be real foods. His term for any food which has been changed by a manufacturing product is an edible food-like substance. Processed foods are those which have been altered from their original state in one of two basic ways: removing something or adding something. That is, the original food has been tinkered with to either make it taste better or have a longer shelf life, think preservatives, or to make it more attractive to the eye, think color. Whenever basic properties of a food are altered, its nutritional properties are therefore also altered. The processing of a whole grain is an example of this. Whole grains, like oats, have an outer layer or husk which surrounds each grain. This husk contains vitamins and fiber. The fiber in the grain has many benefits. One, your stomach feels fuller, so you eat less. Fiber slows down sugar absorption, thereby helping keep blood sugar levels steady. Number three, it lowers harmful cholesterol. And number four, it provides bulk and protects your colon. Processing removes the husk and removes the benefits of husk provides. What to do? What to eat? Pollan's book argues that the traditional diet, developed many millennia prior to industrial food processing, contains the collective food knowledge based down by tradition and culture. Here are some of Pollan's food rules to help us reclaim the lost dietary wisdom which has kept our society healthy for thousands of years. Number one, avoid food products that contain high fructose corn syrup and other forms of sugar. A great way to spot processed food is to look for the HFCS, high fructose corn syrup, added to its ingredients. Number two, avoid food products containing ingredients that a third grader can't pronounce. Number three, eat only foods that will eventually rot, Pollan states. Food processing began as a way to extend the shelf life of food. The longer the shelf life, the less nutritious it is. Number 4, buy your snacks at a farmer's market, eat dried fruits and nuts. Number 5, treat meat as a special occasion food. 6, eat your colors. The color of vegetables reflect new good nutrition. 7, buy a freezer. This gives you the ability to store fresh food bought at the height of the season. Number 8, the whiter the bread, the sooner you'll be dead. Well, that was harsh. Number 9, don't eat breakfast cereals that change the color of the milk. Number 10, eat all the junk food you want if you cook it yourself. Nutritional science has given you the knowledge that a traditional diet leads to a healthier body, but there's only one person who carries the responsibility for each food you eat. Your health is in your hands. That column today was provided to us by Dr. Richard Elkamer. Well, for those of you who are football fans, you know that it has been a weekend of the NFL draft, and it's so much fun to have a kind of local person get picked in the first round, and not only the first round, but first. Here's today's headline. Mendoza ready to prove worth. Raiders select Indiana quarterback first in NFL draft. And this comes to us from Mark Anderson. And yes, I appreciate that Mr. Mendoza is not an Indiana native, but it's fun to have him from an Indiana school, something very close that we all followed during last year's football season. Dateline Henderson, Nevada. Fernando Mendoza sounded Friday like he was ready to get down to business and prove he was worthy of being the top pick in the NFL draft. But the Heisman Trophy winner had been working on making a strong impression long before he arrived in Las Vegas to be formally introduced by the Raiders. He worked with former quarterback Brian Griese, both attended the same Miami high school, on what his role in the West Coast offense could look like, giving him a head start in preparing for a similar system used by new Raiders coach Clint Kubiak. I needed some guidance on how to become the best NFL quarterback, Mendoza said, not just a pro for a pro day or the combine for September, October, December. With that, we went over some general under-center concepts and installed basic bread-and-butter concepts that any team would have. That dedication and mental approach to the game, as well as Mendoza's physical traits, sold management on the idea that he was the quarterback the franchise has long searched for in hopes of returning to the days when the Raiders were regular contenders. General manager John Spytek marveled at Mendoza's ability to recall plays from even early in the season at Indiana. Spytek didn't have to hit the play button when they watched video before Mendoza not only recognized the play, but explained it in detail. Mendoza also acknowledged those plays that didn't go well and what he might have done differently. There was an honesty and a self-awareness to it, Spytek said. I've been a part of a few other quarterback interviews like that before, but not many. Much has been made of how quickly Mendoza can transition from a college system in which he was in the shotgun nearly every down to an offense in which he'll be under center the vast majority of snaps. His skill set fits with any offense in professional football, Kubiak said. The number one thing that I love about Fernando is his leadership, the way that he relates to his teammates and his ability to win. We're looking for a competitor to be our quarterback, and he went 16-0 last year with a heck of a team, and he led that group. Mendoza's focus in Las Vegas will be to learn from veteran quarterback Kirk Cousins, whom the Raiders signed earlier this month, and begin to live up to the expectations of being the first overall pick. Kubiak and Spytek have talked about how they don't want to throw a rookie right into the starting lineup, but also said that the best player will get the job. Mendoza also has another mission. He's launching the Mendoza Family Fund, contributing $500,000 out of his pocket to try to cure multiple sclerosis. His mother, Elsa, uses a wheelchair because of MS, but made the cross-country trip with her family to Las Vegas for Mendoza's first full day with the Raiders. I believe one of my pillars and my identities is giving back and helping fight MS, giving to the community, Mendoza said. So that was a huge part of my identity, and it's something that our family really wanted to do. He credited his mother with helping revive his football career. As we wrap up our time together, let's take a look at some other sports news. Local basketball coaches honored by IBCA, and this comes to us from Marvin Holman. Coaches in the area from junior high to college were named to the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association Coach of the Year list. In the collegiate Coach of the Year, Danville Area Community College's Juwan Goward was named to the list, while on the high school boys list, Westville's Ed Barney was named, Salt Fork's Bryant Russell was named to the high school girls coach list, Bismarck Hennings Junior High, Drew O'Connell was named to the junior high boys list, and Salt Fork's Logan Wade to the junior high girls list. The local coaches, along with all of the coaches named in the various lists, will be honored at the annual Coach of the Year luncheon on May 2nd at CEFCU Arena at Illinois State University. Wow, that was a lot in today's paper and a lot we didn't get to, but I've enjoyed spending my time with you and sharing what we can. My name's been Terry Burdick, reading to you from the Danville Commercial News. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a fantastic week.